This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
It is time to go to the guest hotline and welcome onto the show our guy, Austin Eckler, presented by IT Cadre, trusted insight from trusted insiders. IT Cadre, where DC Sports insiders share their exclusive perspective. If you've got an IT Cadre fan question for Austin Eckler, you could tweet it to us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. You could drop it in the 106.7 The Fan YouTube chat as well. We will make sure to ask him a couple of those before we are done today. Austin, it is great to have you back on the show, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to hear you guys. What's going on?
Not much, buddy. Bye week, restful, relaxing. How you feeling? Give us an update.
Yeah, bye week was definitely needed. Anytime you get the bye week in the NFL, it's always a nice disconnect, even if it's early or late, just because you've been grinding through training camps, OTAs, all off season, and starting to get into the season as well. And as you can imagine, all of that kind of compiles up. So we're getting ours here. What was it, like week 13, I think it was, 14, something like that. But again, I was around the guys, and I know they're feeling fresh and ready to go and got nice rejuvenated spirits. So looking forward to these last couple weeks.
Over the years of your career, Austin, what's been your bye week strategy? Is it one of those, like, I do not even want to look at a football, like I want my feet on a beach or in the sand or whatever, or, you know, is it just kind of, let me just watch TV? Like, what's been your normal strategy? What do you like to do best?
Yeah, the bye week strategy, I like that. For myself, it's definitely disconnect from football. Just get the mind away from it, because when you lock in on football for as long as we do, it kind of consumes you, which is appropriate because that's our job, and it's, you know, a high stressful, high impact. We got to be on our P's and Q's. And so it's a time during the bye week to, like you said, kind of disconnect. There's a lot of hanging out with family. I didn't travel at all this time because I was doing a little bit of treatment at the facility. So that still goes on, right? Can't forget about the body. Unfortunately, the injuries follow no matter what. But I know a lot of guys, yeah, definitely went home or things like that. For myself, I kind of get time to work on the things that I need to catch up on outside of football, which, as you guys know, I have a lot, whether it's the foundation, whether it's my app experience, things like that.
Austin Eckler on Grant and Danny. Year 8 for you. You've put so much into this game and this league. You've played in, by my count, 3 playoff games and 2 postseasons. I mean, it is really, really hard to get to the playoffs. I think you've got 1 playoff win on your resume when you guys beat the Ravens back in like 18 in your sophomore year. You probably thought, oh, this is easy. We're going to be here all the time.
All the time.
But I'm curious, you know, with the stretch run coming, and maybe it's too early to start talking about that in the locker room, but you're one of the few veterans who's probably been there. Is that something that you can impart, like how difficult it is that you can't take these opportunities for granted? Because I think there are some fans that kind of feel like you guys are ahead of schedule, it's this house money season, but here you are with 4 games to play, sitting pretty with a great chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, for us, it's definitely continue to take it one game at a time. Like, we understand, you know, we're in a position to be playing meaningful football here in the end of the season. And it's, as a veteran, I know that's definitely, you know, great for the spirit in the room and the fan base and things like that. But as you mentioned, you know, we still have 4 games left. And so we still have to go out here and perform. There's no guarantees. We're not in the situation where we have a guaranteed spot into the playoff picture. And even if we did, you want to make sure that you're continuing to kind of sharpen your tools as you get ready here during the end of the season. Because this is where, you know, you should be playing at your best. This is where we've had the most time to play together. We know who we are. We know what we can do, our capabilities, where we're good at. We have done our self-evaluations, and so now we're going to continue to put the game plan together that's kind of built around that. But it's where football can take a weird turn, because if you're not in that situation, it feels a lot different. But it feels amazing to be like, hey, all the work we've been putting in has given us a chance to pay off, to make a playoff run here at the end, which is the goal at the end of the tunnel, is to get to the Super Bowl, obviously. But there's a lot of stepping stones that are kind of micro goals that you have to get there and pass along the way.
Austin Eckler with us here on G&D. So obviously different opponents and different, you know, schemes, designs, and you know, things that you want to try to accomplish against each team. But what from that Tennessee game going forward can you go, I tell you what, if we do that, we'll be fine?
Yeah, well, that game, you know, it was one of these things where, hey, we were able to run the ball very effectively. And I think all the games that we've been able to do that, we've shown that, hey, we can come out on top of those games. And so if we're going to be specific, I would say that being able to run the ball, it's shown that in just statistics over the time for us anyway, when it's either it's Jaden or it's, you know, it was me or it's B-Rob, like the times we're effective running the ball is the times that we've been able to get in the win column. So that from an offensive point of view is what we have to do. Obviously, there's the turnover battle we got to continue to control as well. But that Tennessee game was dynamic running game for us. Defense was playing their butts off too, getting turnovers, getting stops, things like that. And special teams doing their job, you know, whatever, we had a punt or do any of the kickoffs, things like that. So offensively, though, run the ball. Can we get our run game going? And that's going to help us win games.
Austin Eckler on G&D. You kind of maybe just alluded to some of this, but, I mean, there are weeks where it's just been a lot harder. I've chalked up the little stretch you guys had to maybe the O-line being banged up. You know, those guys were in and out of the lineup, whether it was Biotish or on the right side, you guys have had some injuries at tackle. I mean, is there more to it than that? Like, what the weeks where it's really, really good as opposed to when you guys are just okay or struggle to run the ball, is it the details you always talk about? Like, how specific are the differences in those performances?
It's 100% the details. Like, go back and look at those games. They're tight games. We're playing some good opponents that have proven themselves. And you look at those games, they're really close, right? Coming down to one possession at the end. You know, you look at really all of those games. You know, the Cowboys game that we just went through came down to kind of a couple possessions there at the end. The Steelers game, did we get the fourth down? Well, you know, according to paper, we didn't, right, to go down and kick a field goal to win the game kind of thing. You know, you look at the Ravens, another one possession game. All of these are like right there at the end where when you're in a good battle with a good team, that's what it's going to come down to, because we're in the NFL and we are professionals. And so when you have two teams going at it, you would assume that it's going to be a tight game, some back and forth. And that's where all the details matter the most. And there's a phrase in the NFL, like games are lost and not won. And the good teams don't put themselves in positions to make mistakes. They do the things they're supposed to and get themselves over the hump. So we've been so close, but that's what the NFL is. It's really close matters that have to come together to make a complete win. And that's what this month's about. We're in December now. December football is about the details, really making those little things show up. And if we're able to do that, again, we'll be in some competitive games, but come out on top.
When you are able to jump back on the field, and you've got some time, obviously, as you're working your way through your rehab and recovering and getting everything right, what's the hardest part to sort of get back into rhythm or game shape or things like that? You know what I mean? Because like when you're out for a little while doing anything, even me talking into the microphone, yeah. I was gone yesterday and I'm starting all over my words. You know what I mean? It's like, what's the hardest part to kind of regain that comfort level when you've been out for a bit?
Yeah, well, luckily, you know, my legs still work, so I'm able to go out there and work out and run and keep that part of my game going. But definitely it's the game speed that you can't really simulate at all, right? Just how fast the game goes. Also getting hit, right? Being in a position of making sure that, you know, you can protect yourself, be effective, while running the ball too. And then also kind of the speed of how we go call plays, operate on the field. Something I can't really simulate by myself. Jaden giving us the call, audibles, right? Reading the defense. So there's a lot of different aspects of the game that are really needed to be in a full team environment or in a live environment to really get that experience to kind of keep sharpening the tools, as I was saying. Obviously, if you're injured, you don't really get that opportunity. So it's kind of a mental type of rep thing. Luckily, I've been playing for pretty much long enough to really kind of know what to expect. So when I do get back, hopefully I can hit the ground running.
Austin Eckler is with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. The only other time all season where you guys played a team that you were supposed to have beaten pretty handily and didn't was Dallas. You guys have mostly handled the quote-unquote inferior opponents. And as a veteran, maybe you don't even view it that way. Maybe you're like, hey, any given Sunday, there's 32 teams, which I understand. But for those of us on the outside looking in, the Saints are without Derek Carr. This, you know, we've seen the spread basically double since the week began. Like, this is a really good situation for Washington. Mike Shanahan used to tell me all the time when he was the coach here, it's not who you play, Grant, it's when you play them. You guys are catching the Saints at a good time. I say all this to ask, in the league when teams quote-unquote play down or like lose the game they shouldn't, something you guys have been great at avoiding other than one all year, is that something you even agree with a premise of? And like, what is the key to handling your business when, say, here's what's irrefutable, you guys have a lot more on the line and have played a lot better football this year than the Saints have?
Yeah, so first of all, never disrespect the opponent. You know, like, that's like rule number one as an NFL player. Never disrespect your opponent, because it is any given Sunday, 100%. And I know from the outside in, it might not look like that because, oh, well, they're not that good, because these people are still paid. We saw what happened to, almost what happened to the Eagles out there, right? Almost lost on that last play there. Like, that's how close any game can get. But moving on to kind of playing people at the right time, obviously there's a season that we all go through, and there's definitely, you know, advantages and disadvantages that can happen, but call it luck, call it, you know, just going through the NFL season, but there's injuries that happen. And so it's kind of, there's a roll of the dice every single kind of week of what's going on with the scenario and the injuries and who's available, who's not. And so for us as athletes, like, we are so focused on just making sure that we do our best and play our best game, that we don't really get into, something that's coached, we don't really get into kind of, all right, well, this is their record, so you guys, you know, we have to beat that. Like, this is an opponent, you respect the opponent, you go out there, whoever it is, and especially division games, they're always usually closer in my experience because you play each other more, you're a little bit more familiar with each other, just players and things like that. But from the outside, I know it doesn't feel like that, but for us as athletes, like, we have to be locked in that type of way, if that makes sense.
It does. Austin Eckler with us here on G&D. And you guys are, like, just wired differently than regular folks, so competitive, and you've obviously gotten to the highest level of sports. There's no higher football league for you guys to get called up to, right? But one of the things I always wanted to explore is, there's always something extra and special when a guy's playing his former team. And, you know, Marshawn Lattimore was a Saint. Now he's here in Washington. Why is that at times? I can understand if there was an acrimonious ending and there's some sort of blood feud or whatever, right? But it always seems like it's a little extra special for when a guy's playing in his former squad. Go into that mentality for me, would you?
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of the things where, you know, like, look, you were with this team, and now you want to show them, like, look what you're missing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you would have kept me, like, this is what you would have had, kind of mentality. And it's pretty unique because it doesn't happen often. It definitely happens just because guys jump around a lot. But it's one of those things where, obviously, you want to always go out there and give your best, but especially against the people that previously had you. It's like if you were to go get on a different show, and because someone let you go or someone traded you, you would feel some type of way, like, okay, like, we're gonna make this the best show because these guys didn't want us anymore. These guys, for whatever reason, I'm not there anymore. So let's show them what they're missing out on. So that's kind of the mindset, or how I would describe it.
All right, Austin, I want to go rapid fire through a couple of IT cadre fan questions here from people listening on Grant and Danny. Austin Eckler's weekly appointment with us. We've had an outstanding time all season. Austin, kind enough while he's still on IR to join us each week to keep the conversation open and fluid with Commanders fans, which is very cool. David wants to know, what is one of your favorite movies? And we'll go through a few of these here rapid fire.
Wow, favorite movies. It's an old one, but Step Brothers.
Well, you can't go wrong with that.
That's hilarious.
That's such a good
movie.
So good.
Did you touch my drum kit?
Classic.
Are you a Will Ferrell mark, or just that movie particularly?
I'm a fan of Will Ferrell, but that one in particular is the one that stands out for me, for sure.
I had a little thing on Instagram the other day, also, just minding my business, and the clip of them in the job interview wearing tuxedos popped up when they can't say Pam. like John C. Reilly pops. Yeah. I think I could be of help here, and just cracked me
right.
up.
Right. So right. good. Good stuff.
Jupe wants to know, have you caught passes from a left-handed quarterback before? And if so, is it different than a right-handed quarterback?
I have actually never caught passes from a left-handed quarterback. Super interesting question. So I would know.
Do you imagine that the spin would really matter much
opposite,
at
right?
all or no?
I think there would be a kind of a learning curve. It's kind of
interesting.
I mean, I don't think it would last long, like a few throws, and I'd be like, okay, like I kind of see how that works. But yeah, it would definitely be different.
Do you have this is from Todd. Do you have a celebration meal after games?
Celebration meal? No, that is not something that's in the routine.
What would yours be? That's a question from Danny here in the studio.
Mine would be king crab legs and some steak.
What do you eat before games?
Typically like a pasta or like a rice and a protein, something like that. So it's just pretty much basic stuff.
So like you have a 1 o'clock kick on a Sunday. Take us through that. You wake up, what time do you eat at the house, like at the crib, at the table, and then pack up shop and go in?
No, we're not even at the crib.
That's true. You're at the hotel.
We're at the hotel, so we're at the team hotel. Wake up, I don't know, 8 o'clock or so. Go downstairs, get breakfast. Usually have like waffles, some bacon, some fruit, some yogurt, something like that. Start hydrating, drinking some water, and then probably leave around 9:30. So I'll pack a lunch, which will be rice and a protein, whether it's steak or chicken or something along those lines. And I'll eat that at the facility or at the stadium, you know, a couple hours before kickoff. So I just have something in my belly.
Austin Eckler, presented by IT Cadre. All right, we'll let you out on this game this weekend. You'll be watching like we will, unfortunately, from afar. Can't help the boys. Give us a player to watch. Who are you zoning in on this weekend that you think could be prime for a big day?
Yeah, you know, I think someone who actually popped off a little bit last week, got to keep it in my running back room, which was Chris Rodriguez. C-Rod, like, man, he did his thing. Was out there at the end of the game for the most of his reps, but every time he's got on the field, man, I've seen him kind of just make an impact. So looking forward to watching him go out there again and do his thing and get that running game going, like I was saying.
Austin, thank you as always, buddy. Talk next week.
Awesome. Thanks, boys.
Appreciate you, brother. There's Austin Eckler on Grant and Danny, our weekly appointment presented by IT Cadre. We do it each and every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. IT Cadre's trusted insight, helping leaders of the nation's most important organizations understand complexity, align efforts, and make the best data-driven decisions to achieve success. IT Cadre, your vision, our purpose. I think Eckler's perfect for this segment. You know, tied with IT Cadre because they're so data and info driven, and he's just so sharp. Like he
thinks about stuff, man. I love it.
I think
always
about
thoughtful.
Him and insight kind of linked together, man. He answers whatever we got for him. So we appreciate him hopping on with us. Averaging 5 yards per carry this year, just about.
Not too shabby, sir.
We'd like to get him back at the end of the season. Who's the biggest threat to the Commanders as they try to make the playoffs in terms of teams that could catch them? That's next on The Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. We will let you know as soon as we find out what draft pick the Nats are getting in the draft lottery that's being held at the winter meetings in just a couple of moments. We're taking you up to 6:30, an hour from right now on The Fan. If you missed any part of Austin Eckler, presented by IT Cadre, go back and grab that interview at thefandc.com. Danny, who do you think is the biggest threat to the Commanders? When you look at the playoff picture right now, the team closest to them is the Rams. But if the Rams actually got really hot, I actually think they would probably end up winning their division. They're in control of their own destiny in the NFC West. They still play Seattle and could take the tiebreaker over. So if they got hot enough to catch the Commanders, then it would stand to reason maybe they just win the division and they're not competing with Washington for a wild card anymore, which then means maybe 8-5 Seattle. because they would potentially lose to the Rams 8-6, and then we could look at their other three games. They could be a threat, but I guess one of those teams from the West, you could say San Francisco because they're 6-7, two games back, they could get on a roll. Atlanta's no longer a division leader, and they still play the Commanders being two games back. So maybe they'd be in the dialogue if you think that they can get their footing and get right and Cousins can recapture some early season magic late in the year. Of those teams, does anyone stand out?
So you said it. It's the Rams making the moves. Now, to your point, they might catch the Seahawks, who have a pretty good spot. They have the same record as Washington, but they're atop a much worse division. Now, the Seahawks have Green Bay, Minnesota, Chicago, and the Rams. So kindly out of that, that's a tough ending, by the way, to the season. The only bad team, and I put that in quotes, is Chicago, and that's not a pushover going to Chicago in the middle of winter. So that's a tough schedule down the stretch. So they could falter. If they go 2-2 and they're now, you know, 10-7, similar record to Washington, it forces Washington to also go at least 2-2, and then you're at the mercy of tiebreakers. The Rams are hot right now. Hot right now, the Rams. What they did this past week to Buffalo was really, really impressive, right? Zoolander. Will Ferrell's character
just
in Zoolander.
See, that movie, you're going to be annoyed. I just want you to know that.
Uh-huh.
I hated that movie.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
I only watched it once. I think I was young, high school, probably.
And I can't believe you didn't like it because that's perfect high school time.
I didn't really get it. You know, even in an era where, like, all the Will Ferrell stuff was amazing to me, I loved every...
Because that was before he was a leading man. That was him as like kind of a side role where he's like this over-the-top fashion guy where he has the world's tiniest self and he's like, tell me something good.
I don't know why. It wasn't just like that I watched it and I didn't really love it. I actively disliked it and I found it annoying. Mm-hmm. That and like Night at the Roxbury was in that same vein.
No, that was terrible.
Like these unfunny Saturday Night Live guys. Mm-hmm. That, like I put that movie in the same vein.
Which I smell what you're cooking there.
Yeah.
The first time I saw it, I went, eh. It has grown on me significantly, though, I will say, as a comedy.
It's a lot of, like, Chris Kattan.
Night at the Roxbury stinks. So you're thinking about that.
Will Arnett.
Yeah, get that out. So cut that. Put a line between that and Zoolander. Zoolander has a Vince Vaughn cameo, which is a 10.
Vince Vaughn?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, but for some reason, and this is going to probably not be true as I think about it, because I love Heavyweights and Dodgeball, I think I'm not a big Ben Stiller guy. Which seems tough, because I also like Meet the Fockers and whatever, all that stuff.
So it sounds like you're a Ben Stiller guy, by all the list of things
I'm not in that. Like, okay. Starsky and Hutch, no. Like, I would go as far as to say unfunny.
Okay. Okay.
Do you disagree with that?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think those are try-hard movies to me. They just tried too hard.
I feel that. Starsky and Hutch, for sure, I think. Like, guys, it's the...
So we're agreeing on everything but Zoolander.
No, it's the show from the 70s. No, I'm telling you, Zoolander, I get it. The first time I saw it, I went, this is the movie everybody's yelling me about and telling me how funny it is?
If I watched Zoolander tonight, how would I feel?
I mean, it's all kind of dated. You know, it's a...
But would I get some laughs?
Yeah, it's a stupid sophomoric comedy. Of course it is.
I don't know why.
But it's like, it's a cut above all the ones Ryan likes, where he's like, dude, no, another teen movie 6 is the best. Like, it's not that. It's way better than those.
It's
but it's in that Dodgeball vein.
What you just did with any comedy of that era, you say something, I will pick it up for you, and I'll give you the next line. I'll give you the next thing. We're moving and shaking, you and I, shooting from the hip. If you do that for... That
Zoolander,
movie,
it's not going to happen for you?
It just falls.
Because it's a great running theme where even though they're like... Heated at their hate, their adversaries, right? Owen Wilson's character, he plays Hansel. Like, Hansel's the hottest up and coming model, and Zoolander, Ben Stiller's character, is the older model, right?
Yeah.
That's like on the way out. And no matter what's happening, when the name Hansel comes up, Mugatu, who's Will Ferrell's character, has to sort of stop and say, "He's so hot right now, Hansel, hot right now," because Hansel's so hot, even though they're like. Fighting to the death and like trying to do all this other kind of stuff. It's like, I can't help it because Hansel's so hot right now.
It's just not my thing.
The Billy Zane walk-off scene is you're sleeping on that.
But anyway, the Rams.
Hot right now.
They've won two in a row. They're hot right now.
Hot right now, the Rams. So they won 3 of 4. Their only loss is this before Philadelphia kind of collapsed. But they've been pretty impressive. That game against Buffalo kind of turned some heads, I think. Now, obviously it's one game, but you also look at their schedule. San Francisco, which looked more onerous, doesn't look so now on the road. At the Jets, again, doesn't look so terrible. Arizona and Seattle to close the season. That group could finish winning, 6 in a row or 5 of 6? And again, be a threat to Washington.
But then they'd win the West.
Right, and Seattle's in a decent enough spot where they go 2-2.
Okay, then Seattle maybe should be the answer if you think the Rams are going to go on a run.
My point is, if the Rams don't go on a run, nothing changes. Seattle wins the division, everything's fine. If the Rams go on a run, it now forces, oh my God, I got to look around at multiple teams, and I got to, no, now maybe if I only win two games, I'm at a tiebreaker with Seattle. My point is, a team behind you winning a bunch, that's a threat.
All right, you go through the Rams' last four, and you tell me how many they win, because I'm going to do the same for Seattle.
Ready? Here we go. 49ers. Feels like a win to me.
That's Thursday night football.
Thursday night. That's okay. I mean, it's precarious.
That
Thursday
is a
division game.
Game, by the way.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan seems to always beat Sean McVay, but
it's true.
Time's good to beat San Francisco.
Yeah,
so
now's
we'll
the
give
moment.
Them a win.
They are, as of right now, by the way, 2.5-point dogs. Rams are, which is surprising, but there it is.
That's a smell test right there.
So well, the public is saying the Sharps have at the Jets. Feels like a win to me.
Okay.
Arizona Cardinals at home. Again, feels like a win to me.
All right, there's a lot of wins happening.
See what I'm saying?
You're going to give them a loss or no?
And the Seahawks, I'll call that an L.
Okay, so you've gone 3-1, so what's their final record?
That makes 10-7.
Okay. Seattle loses to Green Bay, loses to Minnesota. They could win either of those, but I'm going to. Beats Chicago, beats the Rams. That gets them to 10-7.
That's another 10-7 team.
And they will be head-to-head with the Rams, 1-1 on the season, and then it reverts back to in-division record, at which point they would be 4-2 in the division. What would the Rams be?
These were quick mathematics.
The Rams in the division currently are 2-1.
2-1. That would
put said they beat San Francisco and Seattle.
That would put them at 4-2 also. If they beat San Fran and Arizona.
So what's next? Common opponents? I don't want to get into that.
Okay, so who played Detroit?
So here's the point of the story. There is a path to both being 10-7.
Yeah, so now, but now we're in tiebreaker city.
And now what you're talking about.
That's my point. So for me, Washington is in control. You win a bunch of games down the stretch, none of this crap matters. If you don't, if you drop one, which is, by the way, not crazy that you drop a December game as a team that's not elite, that's not a juggernaut, you could lose any of these next several games you're playing. Plus, you got one division game at Dallas, who's already beaten you, and Philadelphia is still really good. I know there's turmoil, but they're still good. The point is, you finish 10-7, and these other teams, Seattle goes 2-2, and LA goes 3-1. That's not insane that everybody could be 10-7, and now we're going, all right, who's the NFC a common opponent second Sunday with the, but somebody played New Orleans? Like, I don't want to do any of that crap.
So here's what I'm doing to your answer about the Rams.
All right.
If you've ever seen the game show, Louis Anderson used to host, and now it's Steve Harvey. It's called Family Feud.
Mm-hmm.
Good answer.
Good answer. Good answer. Good answer.
Now, they are also the team right behind them in the standings.
Me the Rams.
So you didn't necessarily go out on a limb, but nobody asked you to. You didn't have to go out on a limb. You took the team that's closest to them in the rearview mirror.
And then when you're doing the final one, it's like, try again. The Rams. Damn it. Find another team. Pass.
The Falcons. It's like, Rams were the number one answer. 41. Okay. Here are the... To me, the answer I'm going to go with is Atlanta. Now, I actually don't believe this. I'm just going to make the case for the Falcons. I think the Falcons are broken. They've lost four straight. In that time, they have not had a touchdown pass thrown. They're the worst red zone offense in the league through much of this season. I don't like a lot of things about it. They call too many run plays in the red zone. They don't take shots to the end zone. I'm not convinced in Zach Robinson is a play caller. Cousins is struggling. Like, all of these things are happening as they've lost to New Orleans, Denver, the Chargers, and the Vikings in succession here with a bye week sandwiched in. They have not won, by the way, since November 3rd. That's a long time to not feel a win. That's 5 weeks now in that locker room. But they play the Raiders this week. That's a bad Raiders team. Vegas stinks. The Las Vegas Raiders have not won since week four. They've lost 9 consecutive games over 10 weeks. You beat Vegas. You're 7-7. You beat the Giants. Another bad team. You're 8-7. Okay? 2 games to go. Now you play Washington, who you're chasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that Washington is 9-6, 1 game ahead of them at that point. Because Washington goes 1-1 in its next 2. You beat Washington. Again, I don't think they would. I'm just laying out the path to why the Falcons could be the threat.
Headline, Grant Paulson predicts Atlanta beats Washington.
No. That would go over well on Twitter. No, not at all. I think they would. I think Commanders will beat the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is now you're 3 wins in a row, and you've gained 2 games on the Commanders, and you have the tiebreaker, and all you have to do is beat the Panthers, and you get in. Now, that means Atlanta just run the table, which is probably what they're going to have to do. I don't see it after you lose 4 straight. But it's other than Washington, they play the Raiders, Giants, and Panthers. Who's got an easier three games than that?
That is very fair. So in the words of Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction, allow me to retort. Wouldn't the same thing, if we're talking about the Rams getting hot and take, you know, and win a bunch of games, they win the division. Why wouldn't they just win the division? If Atlanta runs the damn table respectfully to Tampa, who's limping around, barely able to find their own feet, they got to go on the road to the Chargers.
I think you're right.
At Dallas and then Carolina, New Orleans. None of those, as many of those teams are great, but neither is Tampa. They've already lost to the Falcons twice. So doesn't Atlanta just, if they rip off four straight wins with their easy schedule, which you are correct about, wouldn't they just win the division?
We're back where we started. Because I think Tampa goes 3-1 and gets to 10-7.
All right, give me the family feud treatment. Name a team that's a threat to Washington.
Name a team that's a threat to Washington.
Atlanta. Show me Atlanta.
Only if they start winning
Ding.
Football games.
Yeah.
But the Bucs play the Chargers. That's their toughest remaining game.
Mm-hmm.
That game's in L.A. I think Tampa's going to win that game. Chargers could win it, but let's just say they lose.
7-7. Tampa is then.
They close with Dallas, win. Carolina, win. New Orleans, win.
So that's 10-7.
10-7. So are the Bucs if they win their final four, as we just talked about, right?
Mm-hmm. Head-to-head, Atlanta's got two
Falcons
wins on
Falcons have the tiebreaker.
There you go.
But now the Bucs have a tiebreaker over Washington, beat them head-to-head, and are 10-7.
Mm-hmm.
NFC South, sneaky, a little bit of a situation here, Danny. A little bit of a situation.
That's if somebody gets their act together and starts like putting one foot in front of the other and winning a game or two, which Atlanta has not done since early November.
Mike Rizzo did some talking today. He was at the winter meetings. We'll tell you what he said about the possibility of the Nats spending and let you know where they'll be picking at the top of the draft board. The lottery's taking place this afternoon over at the winter meetings. That's next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. We are live all over D.C. on your flagship, 106.7. We are also broadcasting in 4K, high definition, some kind of video, over on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page.
Yeah, give us a look. The comment section is always a buzz. That's what I would say. There's a buzz there.
It's lit. The kids say it's lit, I think.
Yep.
We're taking you up to 6:30. So I got to be honest, we are very distracted in studio, and here's why. The Major League Baseball draft lottery is happening as we speak, and the Nationals have a chance to get to the top of the board and pick number one overall. We now know that they will be picking in the top seven, I believe, the top six, because they have announced pick seven through the end of the first round. So they will have a top six pick. They're slotted fourth, so there's nothing yet has happened that's overly positive, but they're one of five teams remaining that have a chance at the number one pick, so we're monitoring that. We will let you know. There's also breaking news out of Major League Baseball from Jeff Passan just moments ago that the New York Yankees and left-hander Max Fried have agreed to a massive contract, a eight-year, $218 million deal for the former Brave, Max Fried, to the New York Yankees. Another of the names that I was hoping Washington would be looking at in free agency, but it has become glaringly obvious, Danny. We talked about this last week, even though that this was the offseason where we've been told they're going to spend, they're going to get back into bringing in veterans and really adding to the system that they've developed and groomed and some of the young players they've gotten to the big leagues, that young core of Wood and Cruz and Gore and Abrams. They have not jumped into the deep end yet to negotiate on the superstars. Soto, Fried, these big contracts being handed out. $218 million over 8 years. 27 per. The 27 per is actually not that much money, if I'm being honest, with Max Fried, who's a Cy Young caliber arm. But it's the 8 years that you go, man,
whoa,
for a guy with a little injury history, that's pretty incredible.
And you're any pitcher that's had meaningful innings, you know, at a high level, it's a risky proposition. You're basically saying we're going to buy hopefully three or four good seasons and just wear it on the back end. And sometimes you get a Max Scherzer. Sometimes a guy, you know, who's, you know, close to 30 when he signs, gives you 6 out of 7 outstanding campaigns.
Max Fried this past year, a 3.2 ERA in 174 innings. This is a guy who, in his career, has been competitive in the Cy Young chase. He was a runner-up for the Cy Young Award in 2022, has finished top 5 in the Cy vote another time back in 2020 in the pandemic year when he didn't lose in 11 starts and struck out about a batter per inning. Really, really good pitcher now out of the division, by the way, which is awesome. You got to get him out of the division.
Yeah, very happy he's gone.
Move on from Atlanta, where he's been since 2017. They just announced that the number 5 pick goes to the St. Louis Cardinals, so that means there are 4 slots left to be doled out. The Nationals, projected to get the number 4 pick, are moving up. The Colorado Rockies have the 4th pick in the Major League Baseball.
They were the favorite, the most likely to have the number 1 overall pick, so they have slid down.
So that means either the Angels, the Nats, or the Mariners are going to get the number 1 pick. By the way, the Mariners were supposed to get the 15th pick.
Yeah.
Which is nuts.
So the Mariners have jumped up pretty high, regardless of what happens.
The number 3 pick goes to the Mariners, which means the Nats are either going to get the number 1 pick or the number 2 pick with Matt Adams in attendance. All right, so they're going to flip a card. It's going to be pick number 2. We want that Angels logo. Show me the big A, baby. If they show you the Angels logo, the Nats get the number 1 pick in the Major League Baseball draft.
So this is obviously, you know, number 2 has yielded pretty good results as well. Dylan Cruz here at number 2 overall pick not too long ago.
So this is for
it depends
Ethan
on
Holiday,
the draft.
Basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
This is Jackson Holiday's little brother, Ethan Holiday.
This is the Ethan Holiday sweepstakes.
Right, the better of the boys, with all due respect to Jackson Holiday.
Jackson's pretty good.
I'll take the number two pick in the draft. This worked
seriously
out very well.
I was going to say, yeah,
that's
the Nats
got
moved,
Dylan Cruz.
The Nats, which I just alluded to, the Nats moved up from 4 to 2. A couple other teams bounced around. I don't bore you guys with all the particulars, but the teams that got boned here are the Rockies, who moved down, and you know, another team or two. But the Nats moved up from 4 to at least the top 2.
Come on, Matt Adams. I've never asked you for anything. I'm asking you right now to deliver the goods.
I asked him for a huge base hit in 2019 when he pinch hit against the Cardinals.
Flipping the card, Danny. Here we go.
Show me potato salad.
The number 2 pick in the Major League Baseball draft goes to...
Come on, spin it.
The Angels! The Nats got the number 1 pick! The Nationals got the number 1 pick! They won the lottery! I wish I had a voice. Why don't I have a voice today? Of all days to lose my voice. Matt Adams, you good-looking bastard.
Look at you, Matt Adams.
I was killing this. I said, why is Matt Adams representing us?
To bring you good luck,
he
USOB.
He played 4 games with the team. He was a champion. He'd won a bat in the playoffs. I will never say anything bad about this again. Matt Adams will represent the Nats in every endeavor until the end of time. The Washington Nationals have won the lottery. The sun is shining on DC Sports.
You send Matt Adams everywhere from now on.
Next,
you hear me, Nationals?
Stop Cooper Flagg. Send Matt Adams to the NBA draft lottery at once. Beaming Mike Rizzo's on
stage.
Here's
Mike Rizzo.
He's ready. He just basically kissed Matt Adams on the forehead.
Hey, can you believe that?
The Nationals have won the draft lottery in real time. It just happened.
How about that, dude?
They have the number 1 overall pick.
All right.
Ethan Holiday, come on down. There's your shortstop of the future.
Yeah, you and your brother can rent a house for off days, like halfway between D.C. and Baltimore.
I can't believe it. The Lord looking down on all of us. Now, money doesn't get spent around these parts. We develop a system. We got young stars.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another superstar prospect about to be added to the discussion. If you just spend a little bit of money, the Nats have the number 1 pick. Wow. I've just guaranteed that I won't have a voice for a week. G&D live on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30. We will get more into this and look at the return of Marshawn Lattimore against the Saints next.